the show.
Well, hey everyone, welcome to this week's show. I think I already said Happy New Year, but Happy New Year. We're now into the new year. How's everyone's year going? Woo! Hopefully it's good for y'all. Please write to us and tell us, because we're feeling a little down now that the barrage of Christmas cards has kind of abated. It's very sad for us. They are still up on a board outside in our hall, which we're excited about. But please do send us your New Year's cards, and then we will be expecting the Martin Luther King cards and President's Day cards. I'm just being honest, okay? We love cards. We were just saying yesterday how exciting it is that people handwrite things still.
And our people send gifts. I mean, really, it's just so sweet. Like, I need to do this more for my own friends, and they're doing it to people I've never even met. Yeah. It really is cool.
You do, like for me. You need to send me like a gift. I'm just saying.
Should I do that? Okay, I'll write that down.
I would appreciate it. Okay, let me give you a quick rundown of this week's show because it's a good one. Later on in the show, Counselor Jeremy Keaton is here to help a guy, bless his heart, navigate just when he is turned down for a date. You know, we talk about building up the scenario of how to ask someone out and how to prepare for that. But then what if she says no? Jeremy Keaton will weigh in on that. For our culture segment, Lisa Turkhurst, she is the president of Proverbs 31 Ministries, is here to talk about her book, Unglued, specifically dealing with emotions when they threaten to overtake you and how that relates to dealing with other people and conflict and navigating that in a healthy and godly way. So always good to kind of touch on that topic, and great to have her as a first timer on the show. But here we are right now for the roundtable, and we've got a great group of people. Everyone here has been on the show before, but for varied topics. We have James Holt. Hey, James.
Hello, Lisa.
Excellent to have you. Roy Baldwin.
Hi, Lisa.
Hey. Roy, I'm so glad you're here for things other than sports-related.
Sports-related. I'm actually that's very
good.
Excited
you're
about
so
this.
You're so multifaceted. That's just good.
You know us guys.
Yeah. And then Martha's been on the show once or twice. So
a
she's
couple
back.
Times,
yeah,
yes.
A couple times. So we figured we'd let her back on the show as well. Well, we are going to talk about something that is near and dear to my heart, and that is personality. And specifically, many of you, I'm sure, out there have taken the MBTI, the Myers-Briggs Type Indicator. I have referred to it before as being, you know, just kind of like I could print out my Myers-Briggs profile and hand it to people and really save probably a year of them getting to know me. I feel like it very much describes who I am. And we want to talk specifically this week, I think, about that T and F, the thinker versus feeler. And to really mix it up, we are doing this in a way that you probably wouldn't expect, because Martha and I, as females, are both thinkers.
It's true.
And don't we just love that about ourselves? I think so. I mean, I think
keeps
that's
us sane, I think.
I know it does. It does.
Sorry, I didn't mean that against you guys.
So because Martha and I are both T's, we had to get some F's in here. And obviously, we wanted to get the male perspective. So we picked two guys who are feelers.
Take
welcome,
that stereotypes.
Guys. Can you take, oh, here's the box of Kleenex. I'll put it down over near you guys. No, let me just start out by saying that for those of you that aren't familiar or need a refresher on the Myers-Briggs, first of all, whether you're a thinker or a feeler is basically how you process information and make decisions. It doesn't mean that thinkers don't care about people, and it doesn't mean that feelers like can't think rationally or have and, you know, are just like crazy and you know, dissolve into a pool of tears at every turn. You know,
thanks for that.
But yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly. Thinkers definitely want logical arguments, whereas feelers want to preserve the relationship. So really a thinker's main motivation is what is truth and what is justice? Like, is this a true situation? Whereas the feeler will tend to trend more towards how is this going to preserve the relationship? And so that's just kind of how we process things. So I want to say that from the get-go. So the first question I want to ask you guys, as we talk about this, because I think it's relevant for our relationships as a whole, whether it's, you know, with our family or our friends or in the workplace or in a dating relationship. What do you love about being either a thinker or a feeler? How God specifically designed you?
Well, I think a feeler goes back to what you talked about, Lisa. I think it's about preserving relationships. Mm-hmm. And that's important for me. In every decision I make, even within my own marriage, how I deal with my kids, it's about preserving relationships. That is the top priority for. So it's kind of interesting. As my wife and I have our conflicts and disagreements, she knows that ultimately I'm trying to keep peace. And so sometimes I'll even throw kind of logic out the door. Even if I feel I am right on a situation, I will give that up because ultimately I want to keep peace with my relationship with my wife. Hmm. So and that's ultimately what's most important. Other than trying to win an argument, it is I really want to win at this relationship.
Hmm. I think for me, it's, when I think about why I like being a feeler, my best friend is a thinker. And so the really interesting thing about our friendship is that we really balance each other. And so when we have to discuss life and kind of work through issues together, he comes from a very different perspective than I come from, and we value that about each other. And so what ends up happening is that I'll listen to him tell about his life, and I can point out exactly where he's being insensitive. And then he listens to me talk about my life, and he can point out exactly where I'm being illogical. But we have that relationship where we can talk into each other's lives that way. And so I think I'm just thankful to have a situation where I can be in a relationship where there's balance and people help each other work through things together.
That is so interesting. I'm scared I'm going to come across as really rude. thinker. But
yeah.
I think
a lot
of it...
just wait until my second question. We'll get into that. Yeah.
I think a lot of it does come back to I like to be right, mm-hmm. you know? And so if I can state a case, it is partly prideful, but also you have to have logic and facts to make decisions and like be successful in life mm-hmm. mm-hmm. to be able to move forward. And I think especially as an editor, I need my facts and rules and like structure to be able to edit things. Mm-hmm. And sometimes my writers probably pay the price. They don't maybe always feel encouraged, but.
Yeah. Well, and I think that too. I'm like, it's kind of that idea of where I totally understand the preserving the relationship thing. I still have that kind of check in my head that's like, okay, but you can't preserve the relationship at the expense of truth or what is right. You can't like, quote, let things slide. And I know that you would, never do that, Roy or James. Right. But I think there's the kind of the tendency for people to say, oh, yeah, okay, because I want to preserve this relationship, I need to not confront this, not deal with that, let that slide or whatever. And so we can get a little bit like nervous about that.
I think it's probably a weakness of feelers is that we do tend to be more lenient than we should be. Hmm. But I think one of our strengths is that we know how to get a message across so that it will be received. Because mm-hmm. you can be completely right about everything, but if you say it in a way that turns people off, it doesn't make any difference.
That's good.
Well, and I think we find that in Scripture, mm-hmm. when it talks about speak the truth in love. Mm-hmm. I think there's this element of both truth, but how do you communicate that in a way that I think you hit it out of the park. It really comes down to how's that going to be received. Not that thinkers can't do that, but I think it really is a blend of both thinking and feeling in regards to how you communicate that.
Mm-hmm. So, which really does, we've touched on this a little bit, but I wanted to ask, like, when you think of this, how do you truly feel misunderstood, would you say? I mean, because I think there are many ways that, whether in the workplace or in a relationship of some sort, we kind of have our Achilles heel related mm-hmm. to our, what our tendency is. And how have you seen that play out?
For me, it is when I feel like my motives are being questioned. Mm-hmm. You really can't be that, simplistic or genuine. Sometimes especially with a thinker, I hate it when my motives are questioned. Mm-hmm. It drives me crazy. I'm like, mm-hmm. I really have good intentions with this. Even if I completely screw up in its delivery, which we can do as guys. But I think it goes back to, but I really for a feeler is I want to preserve a relationship. I want our relationship to flourish, mm-hmm. Whether that's guy or girl, but ultimately as guys, we have a way of tripping up over ourselves. Mm-hmm. But I hate that, Lisa. I hate when my motives are questioned.
Hmm. That probably could actually relate to thinkers too, where mm-hmm. you're like, you're being so unloving and like you're being rude of how you're saying your words,
sure.
But we're like, I'm trying. I mean, my motive is I want to get to the bottom of this, and the way I go about it is using logic and facts.
Yeah,
so.
Say for me, it's like, let me just say what is true, and then I will backfill it with love. But I'm not gonna ignore something. Yeah, I cannot let something slide very easily. Like I feel like I have to say my piece. I have to put it out there as to say flat out, I believe you are wrong in this. I believe this is wrong. I still love you, FYI, you are wrong. You know, it just, I feel like I have to say that, but I still, you know, and then I feel like I'm not believed because I'm not approaching it in a certain way, or because I'm refusing to agree with them or acknowledge that, then all of a sudden I'm insensitive or I don't care about their feelings, which translates into I don't care about them, period. I mean, I feel, and also what's interesting, and I think I've only realized this in probably in the last year or so, is that it plays a lot into my femininity. And I think I've struggled with that in the past of being one of the guys, being labeled as, oh, Lisa, you know, don't mess with her because she'll mow you down, you know, don't cross hairs with her. And feeling like I don't have, you know, elements of femininity, and I have to really like counter that intentionally.
Well, Lisa, and I think for even, I don't know James how James feels about this, but even in regards to masculinity, you know, to be a feeler, you know, there are times like I feel like I'm sometimes the woman or female side in the relationship when it comes to that, because I, you know, my wife tends to be a thinker. And so that definitely plays itself out, because I'm like, you know, even in, I remember in high school where I was like, I had a lot of friends that were girls, but no one ever wanted to date me, kind of thing. It was just one of those things that never really translated for a guy. Of, I tended to be more, have more female friends than I had male friends growing up. And part of that, I think, is because I'm a feeler. I love, you know, the relational aspects of listening and those kinds of things and drawing out the best. And sometimes, you know, even as a guy, I was like, man, I'm not a guy. You know, so I do think there's a part of that element as well where you kind of question, you know, your gender or how, you know, how that's come across. So,
I think it was the opposite for me. Being a feeler actually got me lots of dates.
Oh, no. Are you that guy that has the t-shirt that says, my favorite movie is The Notebook, and you just like work it? I know. Yeah, that's James.
James probably had better skills than I did, so I couldn't translate
it. Well, it is true, though, that I was able to relate to girls better than most of my guy friends, and so I can relate to you in that sense, definitely. Yeah.
Okay. So how, what would you guys say, you know, because like we said at the get-go, you know, being a thinker in particular doesn't mean that you don't have emotions, and being a feeler doesn't mean that you have out of control emotions. What would you say was the last situation that had the potential to emotionally rock you, and how did you process that emotion? Like, how have you come into a mature, emotionally intelligent way of dealing with whether it's just flat out emotion or a disappointing situation or conflict or whatever?
Well, I think, you know, everyone has elements of both inside of them. Whether you're a thinker or feeler says more about what you naturally are inclined to go to first, but it doesn't mean that you aren't capable of doing the other.
Right.
And so I think my answer would be that over Christmas, I was driving across Canada with my girlfriend and we got into a car wreck. And that was potentially a very emotionally overwhelming situation. But I had to like just ignore what I was feeling and focus on what needed to be done in the situation and rely only on my thinking. And I think that ability to switch from one to the other when it's appropriate is an important skill to develop.
Yeah, I think that's a, it's a great question, Lisa. And I think, man, a recent example of that, I think for me, one of the things I've learned is not to personalize stuff, to really try to hear from the other person's point of view. And that's sometimes hard for a feeler. You know, and I think, again, I'm a very logical person. I love facts. But ultimately, I want to help. I use facts to ultimately help me win over a relationship. But ultimately, because it's the relationship is what's important. And so just being married and having three kids, you know, I'm constantly navigating, especially with my girls in my home, about that, in regards to being transparent enough with resolving conflict. And so when they tend to side with their mom or do those kinds of things, that I don't personalize that as much. I think ultimately I know that's my first filter of, okay, don't personalize this, get at a higher level, because I just, as a feeler, I want to go there. There's something, and you can even personalize to the point of, okay, what's wrong with me? Did I not say that right? And in some ways I become a perfectionist, whether you'll see it or not, in terms of how am I winning over this relationship? And you can just get really bogged down, because then you become a people pleaser. So just, so I think part of that is, even as a dad, that can play out in my home as well as in my working relationships as well.
Which is so interesting, because I have that, that scenario plays out for me so often, where I will say, you know, I mean, I can literally tell a person, that is the dumbest idea I have ever heard of. But you are great. I love you. You are fabulous. But I mean, I can argue about an idea or a decision or whatever. And it, for me, in my head, it is not personal at all. And when I'm dealing with a friend who's a feeler, yeah. it is like I just attack them yep. at their core. And I have to realize that because I'm like, what? You know, that's not personal. I'm not making it personal. I'm just saying that your idea is ridiculous, you know? And I'm like, what? What's that? You know? And so it's just an interesting perspective because I have a friend who's a very, very high F. But she's extremely, I feel like she's really emotionally healthy in that yeah. you can tell when something hits her in her emotions, she's very quick at turning it around. She can process it and say, that was an emotional response, but here's what the truth is. And I just so respect her for that because I can see it happen. And, you know, but we crack up about my insensitivity, which I do realize is there occasionally. So I don't know, Martha, what about you?
Well, I've recently read Lisa Turkhurst's book called Unglued, mm-hmm. you know, and it's kind of the thinker feeler stuff, but it's also about exploders and stuffers when it comes mm-hmm. to your emotions. Mm-hmm. And I think as a thinker, I often will stuff things of like, mm-hmm. no, I don't feel that. I don't want to feel that, like stuff, you know, but that only can last so long. And then it comes out. And if I'm crying, it's like, what is this? What's going on? I mean, or when I'm with people who cry, I'm like, I don't know what to do with you. Like, I really, I don't know what to say or like, should mm-hmm. I put my arm around you? Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
No, my thing struggle. Is, let me sit with you and help you fix this. That's the way I do it. I'm mm-hmm. like, you know, I tend to be low on the empathy. And I'm like, mm-hmm. okay, let's get you out of these feelings. That's my nature mm-hmm. is to start, you know, how can we make this better? How can we? And they're like, I just want to cry about it. And so I have to realize that, yeah, that's okay too. You know, that's an okay
Yeah.
Okay response.
But I think feelers need thinkers in that sense too, though, to yeah. really, to begin to look at things more logically, mm-hmm. To think through that, you know, because sometimes to your point, Martha, that can become very unhealthy. So I think there's a real difference between when we think of thinkers and feelers, that there are healthy elements, but also unhealthy elements to how we process information and relationships. So
yeah. Your strength can become your weakness if it becomes
absolutely
weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agreed.
Yeah. So how would you say, I mean, because we kind of touched on this a little bit, when it comes then to conflict, and I'm going to go into this a little bit more with Lisa now in our second segment, but how have you guys seen it work in the realm of conflict? I mean, are you more an avoider or are you more like, let's just put it on the table? And especially like in the, you know, whether it's in the workplace, sometimes we're different in the workplace and we're different in relationships that really matter to us and we know are going to be lasting versus the ones that we're like, I just have to deal with this person for 2 months in this program and then I can just escape, you know? So how do you guys navigate those differences?
Man, conflict with feelers is kind of dicey. Because you have to really establish the relationship and the safety of the conversation first. And once you do that, then you can kind of tackle the issue and separately. But if you don't establish that relationship and say this is a safe thing, you're mm-hmm. still loved here in the midst of this conflict, then the feeler's going to be wondering about that the whole time you're discussing things and not really paying attention to that issue. Mm-hmm. So I think for feelers, it's very important to just protect the relationship on the front end.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I just from, you know, my marriage with my wife, I think ultimately, you know, as we're fleshing out the first few years of our marriage is to realize that, you know, when there was conflict, I needed quick resolution. Mm-hmm. I hated the uncertainty of where things were. And so I just remember pursuing my wife to resolve a conflict. And she needed days to process the emotions, to really think through those kinds of things. And man, I will say we kind of laugh about it now, but we did not fight in pretty ways. But that was our process. And I had to learn that it's okay to let her process that, to give her some time to process those emotions and that I would be okay. Mm-hmm. Because when there was that broken relationship, I've got to fix this. So, and this is where it goes back to the thinking part. I would throw all logic aside to say the wholeness of this relation was more important. And the mere fact, I don't even care if she's right or who's right or if I'm wrong. You know what I mean? That was irregardless is I needed peace in this relationship. And I think that's where it can at times be a stumbling block to that. So yeah, firsthand, I remember our first few years of marriage, it was not pretty at times because I needed resolution right then and there. Mm-hmm. And if I didn't have it, then I just, my world just became in shambles. And I probably carried around a Kleenex box. I still feel so emasculated. emasculated right now. But that is for
it's a
feeler.
It's a blue Kleenex box, though.
It's blue. Yeah. It has flowers on it. No, but no, but I think, but for a guy, I think, you know, when you're wired that way, because in some ways, I really struggled with that early on, especially out of college and really coming to wraps with that is like, I don't feel like I'm like other guys. And because my emotions were much more on my sleeve than I would have liked. Mm-hmm. And so.
Yeah, I think I'm similar to your wife of giving me time to process it and then I can come back with my facts. And then we can talk again.
And this is where you went wrong.
But, yeah.
You process like you're building a case.
Yeah, exactly.
That's probably exactly what it is.
Martha wants to arm herself. That's what she's talking about. No, I think for me it differs. I mean, I think just in past scenarios, if I'm in an argument or in a conflict with a thinker, then I'm like, let's go at it right away. Point, logic, logic, you know, example, negotiate. I can do it, no problem. If I'm with a feeler, I need to walk away because I get overwhelmed by their response, their emotional response. And then I just feel like I'm lost and there's nothing that I can do. I feel very helpless. And so then it helps for, you know, me to say, okay, let's just walk away. Let's cool down, you know, and then let's come back. And that gives me a chance to kind of, you know, see how can I better acknowledge their emotion? How can I better speak into this? Because I think I feel like I get judged easily if, for example, they say, well, because I'm not exuding a lot of emotion, then I must not care as much about it as they do. And I get labeled, you know, well, Lisa, you obviously don't care. You obviously aren't invested in this. You obviously aren't. And I'm like, no, I am. It's just that I'm not, you know, because your reaction is bigger, you're saying that you are, you know. And so I think that's where I have to get some space and just say, okay, how can I show that I'm invested in this and show that I care about you? You know, without having to like fake a big cry fest, you know, and sometimes I just do get so frustrated that it does get to a cry fest. And I'm like, you know what? When it comes to that, you better watch out, people.
No, but I think that's a fair point because I think, you know, ultimately for a feeler, we hate rejection. Mm-hmm. And so when you respond, I think that's what Karen and I have, my wife and I have kind of figured out is, okay, you need days of process, but what I need from you is like, okay, I still love you. I hate you right now at this point, but know deep down I love you and we will work this out. Mm-hmm. I need that affirmation.
And that they're committed to work it out.
Absolutely.
Even if it means in the future.
Absolutely.
It's not going to be the drop it and forget it.
Correct.
Whatever. So, good. Well, guys, I want to thank you for being part of this conversation. We just kind of scratched the surface. Of course, those of you out there, please let us know on the blog how you have dealt with stuff like this. I think it's helpful when we're able to share from one another's experiences. Do stay tuned for Lisa Turkhurst's segment as well, because I think you'll get some specific insights as far as Martha mentioned, the whole stuffing versus exploding. And you know what your tendencies are. So let's figure out how to really resolve conflict in a biblical and healthy way and know our own tendencies in that direction. So thanks, you guys.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thanks.
She's hiding more than you can see. And she's questioning what's so wrong with me. As their lies become her truth, is she the one to blame? Second thoughts disappear, trading pain for pain, but
Hey, everyone. For this week's culture segment, we have another new guest to The Boundless Show. Her name is Lisa Turkhurst. Lisa, welcome.
Thank you.
Another Lisa on the show. So it'll be Lisa Lisa today. Lisa is the president of Proverbs 31 Ministries. Many of you probably know that. She's also the author of many, many books. I don't even know how in the world. It's like 15. I don't even know how you have time to write all these books. That is just amazing. The most recent, and the one we're going to talk about today, being Unglued, and it's called Making Wise Choices in the Midst of Raw Emotions. Now, guys, this is not the time for you to check out because you have emotions too. So this isn't just like, oh, I'm sure it's just going to be ladies talking about whatever. You're so emotional. No, actually, you guys have things to deal with as well. So this is going to be a good conversation. And like I said, she has been, she's an author and has been on a number of different media outlets as well, including now The Boundless Show. So she's kind of arrived in that sense. So very fun. Well, okay, first of all, Lisa, I know that you wrote this book. I mean, you certainly share a lot of your own experience and your own tendencies in this, and especially things, you know, emotions, raw emotions, as you describe them, manifest within your own family. And you talk about how emotions often will come out pretty much around those that we're closest to and those that we love, whereas we have a better chance, at least, of managing them in some way around those that we maybe don't care about as much or don't have as much contact with. So what would you say? Can you give an example from your own life of kind of where maybe something, a good example of where something like that happened to you?
Absolutely. Well, and when we're talking about emotions, you know, I love the fact that you said, oh, don't tune out, guys, because this applies to you. It really does, because really what we're talking about are not just general emotions that happen in everyday life, but it's those specific chaotic feelings and emotions that accompany conflict. Mm-hmm. And all of us deal with conflict. I mean, I've stood in front of audiences this past year asking, is there anyone in here in the past month that has at least dealt with one conflict? Well, of course, 100% of the audience raises their hand. And honestly, I could narrow that question down. Has anybody dealt with a conflict today, in the past hour, in the last 5 minutes? I mean, conflict is so much a part of what happens to us when we're in relationship. Relationship will drive conflict at some point. And my point is that conflict is not necessarily a bad thing. Having conflict doesn't mean that we have a bad relationship. What will really determine how good our relationship is not necessarily that we do or we don't have conflict, but it's knowing how to handle the conflicts that will arise. So in my life, I am married and I have 5 kids. I also work in an office full of women, and I'm on the road a lot dealing with many people that I've just met or longtime friends in ministry. So I have a lot of people in my life, and conflict naturally occurs. And usually conflict for me will happen when one of two things is present. Either I feel a little exposed or I feel opposed. Either conflict will happen because someone threatens to expose my vulnerabilities, my inadequacies, my insecurities, then those chaotic feelings start to bubble to the surface and conflict will occur. Or conflict will happen when I feel opposed, because I want what I want, when I want it, how I want it. And when I don't get it, then conflict will arise and those chaotic feelings will happen. And so I have so many examples. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. Just today, riding over here, my husband and I had a growth opportunity. And that's what we call them now,
okay,
you know.
Good.
But even in my office setting, I mean, last year, Proverbs 31 Ministries has grown so much that one of my executive directors came to me and said, hey, Lisa, I think that we should, since you work from home a lot, I think we should, before we move into the new office, take your office and divide it up. That'll give 3 more places for people to sit. And then you can work at home, which you love to work at home anyways. And we move into the new office, of course, you'll get your office back. And when we had this conversation, I was fine with it. I just didn't expect to show up to the office the next day and have all that already happened.
Okay.
And all my furniture from my office and my pictures and my plants were all divvied out Like, I would walk into the financial office and there's a picture I had hanging on my wall yesterday. Oh. And then I walk into donor development and there's a plant that I used to have sitting on my desk. Mm-hmm. And so literally all my stuff had been taken and divided out and my office was gone. And that's just not how I had it in my mind. Mm-hmm. So I started thinking, I don't think these people that work for me respect me. And we have huge organizational issues, honestly, that we just do. And it was that whole feeling of, am I a good leader? Am I not a good leader? And feeling exposed that good leaders don't have people taking stuff out of their office. Good leaders don't have their organization deciding they don't need an office. Mm-hmm. And I was really undone about this. But then I sat down and had a quick conversation with my executive director, and I'm still kind of feeling raw and on edge about the whole thing. And she looked at me and she's like, hey, Lisa, remember we had a conversation about this and you said you were okay. And I said, I know, I'm fine. But I really wasn't fine. And then she asked me a question I won't soon forget. Lisa, what do you really want? And I said back, I want an office where I don't have three other people trying to clamor for room in that same space. And she said, well, you're going to get that as soon as we move. We respect you. We love you. We want you to have that office. And so a simple clarifying dialogue then helped prevent what could have been a pretty major eruption of the peace in my office. But you see, that's what happens. Mm-hmm. We don't wake up in the morning and think, woo, I'm ready to fight with someone today.
Yeah.
You know, that's not what happens.
Right.
But conflict just occurs.
Yeah. Well, and I think what's interesting too, and something that we should clarify, is that you're not saying that emotions are bad in general and having
right.
emotional responses. And you're not saying that, like you said, having conflict is bad or that having opinions on things is necessarily bad. So I want to know, one of the statements that you make in the book is that emotions should be indicators and not dictators.
That's right.
How can you ensure that your emotions are, in fact, indicators? Because I know a lot of people that aren't even aware of their own emotions sometimes, and then they wonder, wow, this is not the person I am. Why is this spewing out of my mouth? Or why can't I seem to express myself? And they feel very out of control.
Right. Well, I think it starts with being honest about the feelings that are there. And I mean, God gave us feelings. God gave us emotions so we could experience life. You know, they're wonderful indicators. But while God gave us emotions to experience life, he didn't give us emotions to destroy life. And so when I say feelings should be indicators, not dictators, what I really mean is our feelings are like the warning lights on a dashboard of a car. You know, it will say your oil is low, and that will give you a specific call to action. This is an issue to be addressed. That's the same way. Our feelings are indicators for us. If we're angry, that shows us, it's like a little warning light. There's an issue that needs to be addressed. If you want a healthy relationship, or for, you know, carrying out the car analogy, if you don't want your car to run out of oil, if you don't want your relationship to run out of oil, then you've got to put more oil in it. So this anger is a good indicator that something needs to be addressed. This is a call to action. Mm. But your anger shouldn't be a dictator. In other words, your anger shouldn't dictate now how you're reacting in this relationship. And so it starts with being aware. Like, okay, this aware of my feelings, like I am feeling angry. And sometimes as Christians, it's really hard to be honest about our feelings because we have this thought like, oh, no, Christians shouldn't get angry. Oh, no, Christians shouldn't yell. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, well, wait a minute. No, it's the Bible doesn't say don't get angry. It says don't react out of your anger, mm-hmm. you know, and so or don't sin. You know, don't let your anger carry you to a place where you're sinning. Mm-hmm. But being honest, like, yes, I'm angry. That is how I feel right now. Or yes, I'm hurt. That is how I feel right now. Learning to be honest with ourselves is a really first big step because we've got to make sure we know what we're feeling, let that feeling indicate what needs to be addressed and what call to action we need to take, and it'll move us forward in healthy relationships. If we're not honest with our feelings, we'll stay stuck and it'll create a cesspool of bitterness.
Mm-hmm. So this idea of being unglued, you know, the title of the book, you talk about two different responses. One is someone being an exploder and someone being a stuffer. And then there are kind of two variations of each of those underneath underneath those overarching ones. And I was talking to Martha before we met you, and I said, well, I feel like I'm both an exploder and a stuffer, and I would be the exploder blamer and then the stuffer avoider person. And I guess it just depends on the circumstance or the person that I'm dealing with. And of course, I can easily tell someone, you know, when I'm exploding, well, I'm just being direct, or I'm just being, you know, I make all these excuses. Are there any, okay, so what, obviously extremes of either of those are bad, and we need to see our tendencies, but how do we, I mean, is everyone either one or the other, or are there people that are genuinely good at handling their reactions to things, or how do we kind of navigate understanding ourselves in light of that?
Well, this is what makes determining our reaction type a little complicated and messy, is that we switch reaction types many times based on who we're reacting with. Mm-hmm. So you'll react differently with your boss than you would your roommate. Mm-hmm. You'll react differently with your mom than you would your friend. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of factors that come into play. With certain people who you're in closer relationships with, you have more history, which means you have more accumulated impact. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, if I did something that aggravated you today, you could probably let it go because we don't have any accumulated impact. But if you are like living with a roommate and your roommate does it today and tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day, that mm-hmm. those feelings get ratcheted up mm-hmm. to the point where you are on the verge of having a reaction for sure the mm-hmm. next time they do it. So that's what makes this all messy. You mm-hmm. know, different relationships, different intimacies in different relationships. So you'll have different reactions. So that was intuitive of you to say, sometimes you're an exploiter, sometimes you're a stuffer. I would agree, absolutely, because that's what I am. Mm. I'll be an exploiter who blames others with my kids. If you wouldn't have done this, I wouldn't do this. But mm-hmm. because you did this, I'm justified in feeling mad, and it's all your fault. Mm-hmm. The exploiter who blames others. Mm-hmm. And for that reaction type, the best simple strategy that I've learned is to bring a pause into that relationship. Pause before I attack the person, because what I really want to do is attack the issue. Mm-hmm. And if we can learn how to pause and teach ourselves to attack the issue and not the person, like, yes, do my kids need to make sure to put their shoes where they belong so when I'm ready to walk out the door that they know where their shoes are and we can get in the car and actually be on time? What a novel idea, right? You mm-hmm. know? Yes, but I have to attack the issue. Teach them strategies to find their shoes so we can leave and be on time. But instead, if I don't pause, what my tendency is, I can't believe you can't find your shoes. What kind of human can't find their shoes? They're either on your feet or in the closet. Mm-hmm. Wah, you know, mm-hmm. and then the chaos ensues from there. The second reaction type is the exploiter who shames themselves. And sometimes these things go hand in hand. Like I can be both the exploiter who blames and the exploiter who shames myself right after that. But mainly in public, I could do this. I have a stronger reaction than what I was anticipating. Maybe with like the lady at the lost luggage counter at the airport. I really need her help. I need my luggage. She's not interested in helping me. She's had a bad day. And actually now she's decided she wants to get on the cell phone and talk to her boyfriend. And she's kind of ignoring me. And I want to let it go, but I feel like the justice of the world is hanging on this moment right now. Like this just needs to be addressed. Mm-hmm. I'm a rule follower and she is clearly breaking the rules. I don't want everybody in the airport to know about this, but I want her to know that I know she's breaking the rules and she needs to help me find my luggage. And if you don't help me find my luggage, I'm not going to be able to give my Christian message when I'm supposed to go speak in just a few minutes, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And so then an hour later, I get in the car and I think to myself, was I doing? I promised myself I would have better reactions. Why did I feel like it was my job to address her being on the cell phone with her boyfriend? Like, why couldn't I just overlook that offense? Why couldn't I just be more patient? Why couldn't I be more Christ-like? And I start shaming myself. Mm. For me, before I have that reaction, when I'm about to be an exploder who will then later shame herself, I have to bring into that moment perspective and ask myself, if this is the worst thing that happens to me today, isn't it still a pretty good day? So those are the exploders. And then there's two kinds of stuffers, the stuffer that builds barriers And that's the person, you know something's wrong, I know something's wrong. So I say, is something wrong? And you say back to me, oh no, I'm fine. That's the classic stuffer who's building a barrier line. And what's happening when you tell me you're fine, I know you're not fine, then you are shutting down the communication in our relationship. And if you shut down the communication in a relationship, the relationship potential is shut down. Mm-hmm. And eventually the relationship will die, because any relationship, you have to have communication. So when we build up these barriers, we start pretending everything's okay and backing off from the relationship, because it's easier to back off than to really deal with the issue. But here's what I've learned. I have to bring something into that moment before I start building that barrier. I have to bring honesty. I have to lay my honesty on the table and say, if I care about this relationship, I've got to keep talking. Because the minute that I stop talking, the minute I shut down the communication, is the minute that I'm going to back off, and eventually it's going to hurt the relationship. Now, when I say keep talking, I don't mean like just running your mouth and addressing every offense. I mean, certainly there are times to overlook an offense. But if it's a reoccurring pattern in our relationship, and I know I'm building a barrier against you, if I care about that relationship, I need to keep talking. The last one is the stuffer who collects retaliation rocks. This is one I do with my husband, unfortunately. I'll be fine. I'm fine.
Now that you wrote about it, he's wise to your ways. So now you're...
I know. And so are my kids, by the way.
Nothing to hide
behind. And my friends and my coworkers. But the stuffer who collects retaliation rocks, we want to process things in a healthy way. So that's our intention as we start out. But somewhere along the line, instead of processing things in a healthy way, we start collecting proof that I'm going to use against you later. And so I'll smile and say, oh yeah, I feel much better about that. But in essence, I've just gulped in more proof. Like one day I'm recording this in high definition in my brain, and the next time we have this argument about this topic, I'm going to have all this proof of this is a pattern in your life. You're wrong and I'm right. And I'm going to present my case. Mm-hmm. And so before I have one of those times with my husband where I start feeling like I'm about to pummel him with all of my proof, I have to ask myself, Lisa, are you trying to prove that you're right, or are you trying to improve this relationship? Because you can't do both. And that has stopped me dead in my tracks many times. If this is a relationship I care about, then I need to fight for this relationship. I need to improve this relationship. That needs to be a much higher priority than me trying to prove that I'm right. Four reaction types, four ways that we address conflict in our life, that those messy times that have chaotic feelings, we're either pushing those feelings out and exploding, or pushing the feelings inward and creating chaos internally. But regardless, we have, now that we know the four reaction types, we can come up with spiritual and emotional strategies to come back to the essence of the best reaction. And the best reaction is where we take the honesty of the exploder and the peacemaking of the stuffer, and we bring them together. And when I'm honest and I'm peacemaking at the same time, that's the reaction that I'm after.
Which is interesting, because I know that there are both exploders and stuffers who are right now trying to justify past reactions in their heads. And they're saying, well, but Lisa, you don't know my situation when I had to deal with this person, or you don't know. So I want to bring up one from each category. The first is going to be the exploder that says, you know, I'm not trying to retaliate. I'm not trying to verbally, you know, mow someone down. I'm just venting. Mm-hmm. I'm just being honest with my emotion. I'm just expressing myself. How do you know when that's okay and when you've crossed a line?
When I know I'm crossing a line in my honesty goes from gentle honesty to brutal honesty when I refuse to own my issue. So I'm bringing an issue into this conflict. Now, what I really want to do when I'm exploding is just address your issues. But the reality is, I know I'm having a better reaction when I come to the table and say, we've got an issue that I want us to address. And I'm going to start out by owning my part of it. This is my part of it. and then understand and let it sit there for a little bit and really listen to the other person without jumping back in and start addressing or justifying or pointing out their flaws. Mm-hmm. And I think if we can do that, if we can, any kind of reaction where we're about to explode or vent or just be brutally honest, we have to really challenge ourselves first. What have I contributed to this conflict? And I'm going to start there.
Hmm. Okay, so now for the stuffer, a stuffer may be saying right now, well, I'm not really stuffing it, and I'm certainly not holding back any rocks. I've just decided that I have to let this go. But you kind of feel like, I don't know if you're really letting it go. I mean, that used to be one of my mom's classic comments was just drop it, just drop it. And it would drive me nuts because I always had to have resolution for something. So if you're trying to resolve conflict and the other person is just dropping it, then you're left holding the bag. So what about these stuffers that are claiming? I mean, I think some people can, in a healthy way, let things go mm-hmm. genuinely, especially if they're not super important or whatever, mm-hmm. Or they're a naturally laid back personality, you know, God bless them. But yeah, I mean, what would you say then to the stuffer who wants to just say, well, I don't have to deal with everything. Some things I just have to let go.
Right. Well, I would say every relationship is on a continuum, either toward this beautiful oneness of like seeing things eye to eye and just having like you bring the best of who you are, I bring the best who I am, and this intimacy. We have this wonderful connection. Okay, so that's on one side of the spectrum. On the other side of the spectrum is isolation. So if you're truly letting it go, then it should be taking you closer to intimacy in that relationship. But what happens is we say we're letting go. In reality, we're pulled more towards the isolation in that relationship. We're backing off from the relationship. We're just saying, I don't need to hang around that person as much, or I don't really want to address this. I don't know how to address this. So sometimes letting it go can really be code for, I don't know how to deal with this, so I'm not going to.
Mm-hmm. Or it's unsafe territory, so yes. I'm just never going to bring it up again.
Exactly. Kind of. Mm-hmm. So we have to be honest. In letting it go, are we being pulled toward isolating in the relationship or toward intimacy in the relationship? And if letting it go, if we truly can, and it leads us to better relationships, then hey, more power to you. I think it is good. I mean, it's biblical to overlook an insult. But sometimes we say we're overlooking an insult and it's really code for something else that's pulling us away from the intimacy in that relationship.
Yeah. So just in our, you know, in last couple minutes here, let's talk about what you alluded to, and that is really understanding how to work through conflict and ultimately dealing with our feelings in light of this in a way that does bring us closer to those that we have to be around every day. I mean, because there aren't many people that we can genuinely walk away from, you know, nor should we. So one, I know you share the scripture in the book from Philippians 4 about let your gentleness be evident to all. And I think this is another thing where we can easily cop out and say, well, I'm not really a gentle person. That's not me. That's my friend, Sally. That's my, you know, they're just sweet. They're just whatever. So we can easily say that. And I think in tandem with that, you addressed something, what you called looking at our underbelly, you know, and kind of recognizing that. So once we recognize our tendencies and see that, how do we really put on the spirit of Christ in gentleness to then begin to relate to others?
Yeah. I am not gentle by nature, typically. I can be sensitive in certain situations, but when my emotions get ratcheted up and when I'm in a conflict, it's not in my nature to be gentle per se. Mm-hmm. So I used to kind of make a joke about it, like, when God was handing out gentleness, I forgot to stand in that line, ha ha, you mm-hmm. know? Mm-hmm. But what I've learned is, yeah, I may not be gentle by nature, but I can be gentle by obedience. And that's an area where God's saying, okay, if this doesn't come natural to you, then this is an opportunity to step outside of what's natural and do it out of obedience to me. Because I have said to you, Lisa, let your gentleness be evident to all. I didn't just say let your gentleness be evident to those people who it's easy to show gentleness to. Mm-hmm. I said let your gentleness be evident to all. And so when I started coming to the realization that I just kind of handpicked the fruits of the Spirit that I thought, yeah, that one fits me. That one doesn't really, but that's okay. That's just, we're all different. We all bring a certain slice of the pie to the puzzle, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, No, Lisa, if you're not gentle by nature, then you need to be gentle by obedience. And that's something that I've had to look up Bible verses in the Bible about gentleness, have the Lord really challenge me. Now, I will absolutely pray, Lord, I need a gentleness indicator in my brain to start flashing. I need you to just speak right into a situation that I'm facing. Like, hey, Lisa, this is an opportunity. Show gentleness right here. This is your opportunity to honor me. And the Lord, when you ask him to reveal those times where you need to be gentle by obedience, he is very, very loud in his instructions.
Mm-hmm. Well, good thoughts. There is so much else that we could talk about related to this. I want to remind you guys, the book is Unglued. I've been talking to Lisa Turkhurst here. Just something that kind of came to mind as you were saying that was how, and I think this would be particularly noticeable within our audience, is that with singles, there are probably some out there that are just saying, well, this isn't even something I struggle with. This isn't even, you know, whatever. And it's probably because if you don't feel any indicators toward this, you're probably not in real relationships, which is another whole concern. I mean, really, if you're living in a biblical way with other, whether believers or unbelievers, family members, naturally, those who see this in marriage are going to get this, you know, every day. But for those of us that are single and can retreat if we want to, we need to be intentional in running towards people and loving them, I think, with the love of Christ and being in real relationships and making sure that we are. So, Lisa, thanks for lending some great insight to this. And certainly there's more that folks can glean from the book. So do check it out. The book is Unglued.
Thank you.
Calling all saints, the weary and weak, come and find hope.
We are opening up this week's inbox, and I have the privilege of sitting here with Jeremy Keaton, one of our counselors. Hey, Jeremy.
Hello. Good to be with you, Lisa.
Glad to have you. Thanks for carving out some time to help our folks, our listeners, which are growing and growing. We're so excited about our audience. Jeremy is going to answer a question that I am going to read right now, and I'm very eager to hear his answer. This listener wrote in and said, there seems to be a lot of advice on how to pick the right partner or how to date, but there doesn't seem to be much advice on what a guy should do when he receives a no answer from a woman. What response should a guy have when a girl states that she is not interested in him?
Very good and mature question.
Not that this ever happened to you. I'm just saying.
Right.
Okay. Right. Go ahead. You can help those other guys.
Well, listen, the ideal response is probably different from a realistic or emotional response. So I just want to say that up front. And that's okay. We can be real with what we're feeling, but still shoot for an ideal in how we carry ourselves. And here's the ideal, I believe. As men, we need to know who we are as men, separate and apart from her no or her present lack of interest or expressed interest. And oddly enough, this may be the very thing that could cause her to change her mind in the future, how you carry yourself, how you respond and handle this no. There's no guarantees that that will happen, but you sure don't gain any points or gain any respect, and certainly don't display self-respect by wallowing, chasing her down emotionally and in some overly fervent way. The goal for us as men, whether married, dating, or seeking a date, is to grow in this kind of self-assurance. that comes from God, from our identity in Him, knowing ourselves appropriately, not thinking too highly of ourselves than we ought, or too lowly of ourselves than we ought, having an accurate view of ourselves. So our security and self-esteem, if it's solid and healthy, it can't be addictively hinged on the need for another person's affirmation to be okay in our own skin. So that's the ideal, right? Mm-hmm. That's the target. But as we shoot for that goal, it's okay, like I said, to acknowledge, hey, I'm heartbroken. I'm heart sick. I'm disappointed. And to really express that in a safe place, maybe with a buddy or a mentor, process your reaction, your questions about what's going on here, questions about yourself, process that somewhere. But as you do that, listen to the feedback in conversations you're getting with your mentor or your counselor or your friend. You may learn mistakes that you've made or miscalculations or ways that you didn't perceive that you were coming across. And by talking with a confidant, you can also just receive encouragement to keep seeking God's plan and accept that a door may have closed. This is more productive. That's a more productive response than becoming ashamed or permanently downtrodden about something that didn't work out. If you go the self-pity route, Lisa, that won't help the guy's future chances with this or any other lady who wants a healthy, self-respecting, and self-confident male.
Yeah. It's interesting because I think I see a lot of similarities here between, a woman's response and a man's. You know, women, you know, I think the one thing we have to guard against, whether you're the guy or the girl in the situation who may or may not be rejected on either level, is, you know, the one thing guys don't want to do, and I tell women this the same way, is say, well, okay, this is obviously why you're still single. You know, and to become very bitter and angry about, you know, you feel rejected. And so it's like, okay, well, if you're going to reject every guy, then, you know, good luck trying to get married or good, you know, mm-hmm. We can easily try to make them culpable or get bitter about that. And then two, I think it's just helpful to realize that in the larger scheme of things, God knows exactly what relationship you need to be in. You know, mm-hmm. We have to acknowledge that God is orchestrating this. And just one no does not mean that, you know, everyone's going to say no to you. It doesn't mean that you will be said no to for the rest of your life and that no, like you said, plays into your identity. So I think it's helpful as we craft it scripturally to understand that, yeah, we are first and foremost in this kind of relationship, brothers and sisters in Christ, mm-hmm. and we need to build one another up in that, you know, like you said, putting aside those perceptions that we may want to judge one another on and just look at it, you know, in a more healthy way.
And Lisa, if we can take the mindset that everything is feedback, mm-hmm. yeah. that a no is something to consider between me and God, between me and myself, between me and my buddy who is mentoring or me, that it's feedback. It's mm-hmm. it's another set of information or trial or situation that's merely feedback that I process into how I'm going to respond now, mm-hmm. rather than saying, rejection, rejection, rejection. Say, okay, this is feedback. And what do I do with that? And what do I want to do with that? And who do I want to be mm-hmm. in the face of this situation?
Mm-hmm. All right. And just really quickly, is a no once a no forever? When should a guy say, you know, she rejected me now? I mean, should he like have a waiting period and then go back after it? Or where should he go with that?
You know, I think that this is where style is okay, mm-hmm. and you need to have decorum and some style about that. Emotionally chasing someone down and 10 minutes later or 2 days later inviting them to the same party or banquet or mm-hmm. outing, that's probably over the top. Mm-hmm. But being able to find another opportunity to, quote, run into this mm-hmm. individual and to not appear desperate in the least, because hopefully you're not on the inside, mm-hmm. but to re-engage at a certain point or to pose another scenario, maybe a little bit altered scenario, whether it's less overt, say a group date or a group outing that gives you another chance to be around that individual. I think that's very appropriate. And a no now is not always a no in the future. There is something valiant to a kind of gentle, confident persistence that a man could have. But to do that endlessly and to not take the feedback after multiple times might be unwise and move you into the desperate category.
Yeah. Guys, let her just observe you. Let her understand who you are. Do not fixate on her and craft this relationship in your head. Not helpful. So, Jeremy, thank you so much for weighing in on that and being part of this question and solution and just giving some great wisdom, I think, to our listener in this. So, appreciate
great.
It.
Great. I hope it's helpful.
All right. That is it for this week's show, everyone. We want to hear from you. Write to us at editor@boundless.org so we can answer your question in the future. And I hope your year is off to a great start. And as you navigate these relationships, that you're doing it biblically and intentionally, because that's what we love to see. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the family.
A donor-supported ministry of Focus on the Family.